It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us today. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today, Cecil?
Ben, last week we spoke about fiduciary liability, and we want to continue to talk about that substantive area of the law. For the listeners that didn't hear last week, basically, if you are the agent under a power of attorney, like if you're your parents, mm-hmm. people always say, I am the power of attorney.
Right.
Really, technically, they're the agent under a power of attorney. Mm-hmm. But if you're the agent under the power of attorney, if you're the executor of an estate, administrator of an estate, or a trustee of a trust, then you are a fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
And you are handling the affairs of another. You're handling the property, if you will, of another person. Granted, it may be a person, it may be your spouse,
mm-hmm.
maybe your child, someone that you're very, very close and connected to. But it is still not your property, and it is the property of another. And as a result of that, there is a heightened level of care as to how you are to handle this property. For the benefit of the another, for the other, and you are held to that heightened level of that heightened standard. You know, when it's our property, Ben, we can do anything with our property. I mean, if we want to lose it, if we want to sell it for a lower price because we're just tired of it, if we want to just give our car away.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good example, by the way, because many times in estates, people just want to give the car away
mm-hmm.
to the grandchild or to the boy down the street
or charity,
that needs a car. You know, you can't do that.
Hmm.
You just can't do that in an estate. We're going to have to kind of find our way home if that's what the intention of the executor is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is an area of the law that usually involves litigation, unfortunately. Our office has any number of files right now where, you know, executors are being challenged
mm-hmm.
for decisions that they made. People under a power of attorney have not kept accurate records. They've not there's been self-dealing
mm-hmm.
with the assets many times under a power of attorney, the changing of account registrations under a power of attorney to make the account at the bank pass all to that particular agent under the power of attorney.
Right.
These are the kinds of classic things that we see. And of course, it's a very active area right now. The answer to some of these dilemmas is to seek advice. Even if it's just a few hours of advice with a good lawyer, if you are called upon, Ben, to be the agent under a power of attorney,
right?
Even if this is your mother or father, the best thing to do is to consult with a lawyer for an hour or so and find out what the level of record, what are the mechanism for proper record keeping?
Mm-hmm.
What mechanism should use? What kind of accounting burden do I have under the document to show other members of the family what I'm doing? And seek some guidance on this, and it will be worth its weight in gold down the way. Also, if you're an executor, an administrator, which is really the same thing, you are the fiduciary of the estate. The burdens now for an executor and administrator under current law and under current procedural requirements at the clerk's offices in our state
mm-hmm.
are significant.
Mm-hmm.
More and more folks are just finding it really difficult, impossible to handle an executorship without at the clerk's level, I might add. It's not because the clerks aren't helpful or don't want to help or don't have the time. It's just that the administrative office of courts has audited the clerk's offices throughout the state in the estates divisions, mm-hmm. and have put an added layer of burden upon the clerks as to documentation, record keeping, canceled checks, receipt and release agreements. This issue that I just mentioned with regard to the car, mm-hmm. needing to give it to the young teenager down the street who so wants to just have a car and has been mowing the grass mm-hmm. for grandmama and
exactly.
granddaddy
yeah.
for, you know, for months and months, for years. And you know, everybody wants the child down the street to have the car. You know, these kinds of things are more burdensome than ever mm-hmm. for an executor. And as a result of this, we are seeing more and more clients seeking advice with regard to estate settlement.
Well, again, it makes a lot of sense because, again, as the requirements have been there for some time now that they're being strictly adhered to, you've got to pay attention to it, right? I mean, Wes, I imagine that comes up a lot when you're litigating about this.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, the liability with regard to breach of fiduciary duty, you know, many times pours over into, you know, the person individually as well, because, you know, the person who's serving in this role, you know, they're in control of whatever the asset is, whether it be an estate or whether it be the assets of someone who they're administering or dealing with through a power of attorney, or whether it be a trust or whatever it might be. But, you know, in the event that there's some breach of fiduciary duty, meaning the money is misused or the person helps out themselves a little bit mm-hmm. and they shouldn't do that, or they take some action that is not consistent with the what's in the best interest of the trust or the estate or the maybe the elderly person, then they can be personally liable for it. That, you know, kind of dips into their own pocket. I mean, in the event you find yourself on the other side of a lawsuit because of allegations that you breached a fiduciary duty, sometimes what can come with that are claims for punitive damages, punishment, interest accrues on these type things at about, well, usually it's 8% interest, the legal rate from the date of the breach going forward. So, you know, this could be something that could affect, you know, the individual from a personal standpoint many, many years later, even after they served in this fiduciary role. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got lots of lawsuits going on in our firm at any given time dealing with these kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. And these lawsuits really come in all different kind of colors and shapes and sizes, so on and so forth. I mean, we have, you know, actions where there's been petitions to revoke the letters of the executor, letters of administration mm-hmm. or letters testamentary because the allegations that the person's not doing things right. We have guardianship actions that become contested, and sometimes some of these issues come into the guardianship actions. In many cases, they really shouldn't, because, you know, guardianship is more about, is the person incompetent and do
right.
they need a guardian? But sometimes the actions of the past power of attorney come into play,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these type things. You know, we have claims for straightforward breach of fiduciary duty, and we're on both sides of these cases. Sometimes we're representing the plaintiff, sometimes we're representing the defendant. But Cecil's right, it's a very active area of the law. Our General Assembly is quite aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of some of the things we've seen factually and through cases over the past, say, 10, 15, 20 years, there's actually a new power of attorney statute that has just been adopted,
mm-hmm.
Which is the first new power of attorney statute we've had in a really long time. And that power of attorney statute comes into play on January 1st. So, we actually just received a copy of it yesterday. So we're not
yeah,
ready
really.
To talk
yeah.
about it yet,
but
it's a moving target. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's something as an attorney, it definitely keeps you on your toes. Yeah.
As we mentioned, Ben, you know, across the state, this has just been such an active area for mm-hmm. so many lawyers. And again, the power of attorney is kind of one of the real, you know, that's the breeding ground. That's
mm-hmm.
the fertile soil in which a lot of these cases sometimes frame up. Does the agent have the right to gift to himself or herself.
Right.
Does
right.
the agent have the right to sell property? You know, particularly maybe sell property at less than, you know, the fair market value. Does the power of attorney have the option to buy the property? Mm-hmm. And if so, at what price? So Wes is absolutely correct. We are not surprised to now see that the governor and the North Carolina legislature have enacted a wholly new chapter
right.
in the North Carolina General Statutes as to the substantive law of the durable power of attorney.
Well, that'll be interesting, really interesting
yes.
to hear what is going to be in this new law and how that might change things. So we'll take a look at that in the weeks and months ahead. But we'll be back in a moment with more on fiduciary liability and responsibility. If you would like to give us a call and ask your question, 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And welcome back to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today. And as always on Let's Talk Legal, we take your questions, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674, talking about fiduciary responsibilities and liabilities.
One of the other thoughts that comes to mind, Ben, is that it's always wonderful when we have clients come in. I had this happened very recently where a client came in. She's the trustee under her parents' trust. She's the executor of their estates, and both parents now have died. And she has, you know, three other siblings. There's mm-hmm. four children in the family. And her whole goal was for there not to become any friction
mm-hmm.
between the four children, that things were in good stead, things were in good standing. And will you please, you know, Cecil and Andrew and Wes, will you please keep us on track
mm-hmm.
so that what are good relationships between me and my siblings doesn't change in any way? I want to do everything by the book here. I want them to have documentation, accountings, et cetera. You know, this, of course, is a mighty smart person.
Right.
Of course, we have files on the other side of the spectrum mm-hmm. where, you know, the siblings aren't even speaking to one another.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even communicate with each other. And this is unfortunate because of something in the past that happened.
Happens all the time.
And, of course, there we are with those kinds of files. Back to this clerk's offices across the state, not mm-hmm. picking on Carteret County. I mean, this is happening. As you just mentioned, one of the auditors that was here in Carteret County was also in Orange County.
Yeah, the state auditor.
Which,
yeah.
of course, is, yeah. you know, Chapel Hill, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what is happening here is that the clerk's offices are now having to look beyond just the accounting
mm-hmm.
and are requiring the underlying substantiation. So, for instance, if an account is joint with right of survivorship, there's a particular place where that is stated on the accounting, but the clerk now wants to see the account registration statement, the agreement with the bank.
Yeah.
That was signed by the testator at the bank that established this joint with right of survivorship.
So the sworn testimony, basically.
And it is all sworn testimony.
Yeah, is not enough.
It is not.
Okay.
It is not. It used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fairly recent change, I might add. Canceled checks.
Mm-hmm.
Even the canceled check to pay the funeral.
Right.
A receipt, a receipt of paid in full by the funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it used to be, again, that the sworn statement, the sworn accounting would show that the funeral was paid in full. There it is. You know, $4,000 for cremation or $2,000 or $3,000,
right.
$14,000, $10,000 for burial. This was accounted for. Everyone knew it was paid. That's not sufficient now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What we now need is to show a paid receipt from the funeral home and the canceled check.
Right.
You know, Ben, let me ask Cecil a question about that, because, you know, Cecil and Andrew in our office do the majority of the estate administration. And I'm not in that quite as much. I'm dealing with the litigation more. And I've heard you guys talking about, you know, the clerks requiring the actual signature cards for these joint with right of survivorship accounts.
Correct.
So, so it's interesting to me, the account statement that indicates joint with right of survivorship, that's not sufficient?
No, not always. And sometimes we can't find these or we can't locate
signature
cards, mm-hmm. particularly, you know, with older clients where the accounts were established, you know, many years ago.
30 years ago, pre-digital. Right,
yeah. And, of course, you know, sometimes the bank statement does not indicate that it is joint with right of survivorship.
Right, right.
A lot of your stock, as you know, Wes, a lot of your stock statements do.
Mm-hmm.
Like just yesterday I was looking through some stock statements with, you know, the typical Edward mm-hmm. Jones or A.G. Edwards or Smith Barney, those kinds of statements. They many times do show that it's JTWROS. But a bank statement or a CD,
right.
the statement itself will not necessarily show that it's joint.
Right. There's no question about that. But, I mean, normally, once we see an account statement that says joint with right of survivorship,
right.
then we assume that mm-hmm. the bank has done this correctly.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, it's good to hear this because, you know, 5 years ago, there's no way a clerk's office would be asking for a signature card.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the listeners out there, I mean, what this is about is that for folks who aren't sure what we mean by joint with right of survivorship, you know, basically what that means is if you own an account with someone else or several other people who, you know, whatever the circumstances might be, usually it's husband and wife, then upon the death of one, it automatically goes to the other.
Right. They
no matter what,
taking,
the,
they
no
start
matter,
spending from it.
No matter what the will says.
Yeah.
Right. So obviously the clerk's office wants to make sure that those assets, if they're in a joint account or not in a joint account, if they're not joint, then they're going to be probate and they're going to pass through the will. But obviously the clerk's assets is, or the clerk is concerned about where those assets are eventually going to end up. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that's the issue?
That is exactly the issue.
Is there another reason? I can't think of another reason.
No, that is the reason.
Right.
That is the reason. Because, of course, as we've said so many times on the program, Ben, you know, the clerk is looking at, as is the lawyer, we're looking at the will.
Mm-hmm.
And the will says that the assets are to be divided by the three ways.
Right. Right.
And yet the account registration is saying just the one child.
Right.
Which many times, back to, you know, what we've been talking about, is the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Is the agent under the power of attorney? And so, you know, did it get changed? Did it get modified? I mean, these are questions that other members of the family are going to be asking.
Yes. And okay. then that may point to, I guess, a litigation possibility, right? That might claw back that money.
That's right. And that's a really important issue, I think, to pause on for just
mm-hmm.
a second.
Yes.
The clerk's office can certainly pull the account statement and from the attorney get the signature card.
Right.
And I understand that. You want to make sure that this asset is passing consistent with law.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that the signature card indicates that it was signed not by the owner of the account, the parent, for example,
mm-hmm.
but it was signed through a valid power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
and this was done correctly in all respects. And let's say the clerk may personally mm-hmm. think that that kind of stinks.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't look right. This
right.
is a big account. Well, the clerk has no authority whatsoever to impose his or her opinion about that into that situation.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk has to follow what that account statement says and what that signature card says. We can't litigate that issue at the clerk level.
Right.
If someone feels as though the signature card was procured through fraud, or the person did it without authority, or the person through power of attorney acted outside their scope, then the right place to address that is in the superior court.
Right.
Yeah. Before a judge and or jury, because our Constitution obviously guarantees us those due process rights.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk doesn't have that right to make that final decision on those kind of issues.
Okay, we'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, in just a bit. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, talking about the responsibility and liability of a fiduciary, and been spending some time particularly with administrators and executives.
Some other examples, Ben, are that the expenses of the real property mm-hmm. are not an estate expense. And so what classically folks do is they inherit mom and dad's house.
Mm-hmm.
There's brother and sister.
Right.
The house is going to be 50-50. There's a, you know, $15,000, let's say, checking account.
Mm-hmm.
They make that their estate account, and then they pay the light bill, the power bill, the mm-hmm. taxes, the insurance on the house out of that, out of those monies. It makes perfect sense that that's what they would do
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that that's mom and dad's money. This is mom and dad's house. At some point, they're going to sell the house.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe one of them's going to buy the other out. But, you know, that might take 6 months, 9 months, a year, or longer.
But a fiduciary has a responsibility to keep that up, right?
It does, but not out of estate funds.
Mm-hmm.
That's a technicality. That is another red flag that the clerk's offices are now being required to enforce,
mm-hmm.
that you not use estate money to maintain the integrity, if you will, of the real property. Now, the reason behind that is that real property passes to the beneficiaries on the date of death.
Right.
So if this client were well advised, what they would be advised to do is that brother, they can take the $15,000, make a distribution.
That comes from a parent's account.
That comes from parent's account. Make a distribution of, say, $5,000 to each one of them.
Right.
Put that in a joint account between sister and brother,
mm-hmm.
and now pay the
from that account
from their account.
All right,
from their account, not the estate account.
Okay,
there are all sorts of little technicalities like this that used to be, as Wes was saying, 5 years ago. These things just weren't looked at.
Mm-hmm.
They were not that important. They are now. Very important in light of this heightened scrutiny that we have at the clerk level across the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, again, all the more reason to get the proper advice. Right.
And, yes.
And even, you know, a lot of people are going to be coming into, they have a will that was written some time ago someplace else, and not by you guys or
right.
whatever, but they still can come to you for that advice, right?
Oh, yes. Just yesterday we opened up an estate where the will was done in Wake County probably
mm-hmm.
about 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And they located here, never changed the will.
Mm-hmm.
The will and the trust are a bit out of date.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to make it through that file just fine. But absolutely, we can help folks when the opportunity arises.
Call on Harvell and Collins at harvellandcollins.com, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.